time now for hour number two of this weekend's big two-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Michael Harrison here in the anchor chair, and of course the program is hosted by Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. And we're going to kick this hour off now with Carol in conversation with Kathy Rikes. She's the author of 16 New York Times bestselling novels and a forensic anthropologist. She's going to talk to Carol about her latest book titled Bones Never Lie on Bantam Books.
Now, you've always said science was your number one priority in your life, but didn't you recently find evidence that you also loved storytelling and writing when you were as young as 9 years old?
I did. I had forgotten all about it, but I was cleaning out some dressers, and I found two old handwritten books that I had done when I was about 8 or 9 years old. One was a mystery, and one was a romance.
Wow. So the seed had been planted.
I guess.
Now, I want to ask you, though, Kathy, before we talk about your latest forensic mystery, Bones Never Lie, when did you first realize you had an interest in science? And for those who don't know, what does a forensic anthropologist, scientist do?
Well, I think as a kid, I was always much more interested in collecting spiders or snakes or whatever than I was in bones than I was in dolls or writing poetry or something like that. So I think my interest in science goes way, way back. Forensic anthropologists focus on bones, human skeleton, and we determine from the bones what any details we can in order to help coroners and medical examiners mainly, but law enforcement, whoever, either to identify remains or to figure out how long that person's been dead or perhaps the manner or the cause of death.
Now, they always say that when you write, it's a very good thing if you write about what you know, and your main character, Temperance Brennan, also mirrors you because she's a forensic anthropologist. How closely is she to your real personality in real life? One thing I do love is her dry sense of humor.
Well, I'm told by my friends that we have the same type of sense of humor. We can both be a bit sarcastic and cutting at times, I guess. Certainly professionally, she's the same as I am. She works in a large lab in North Carolina and also in Quebec, which is what I do. At least that's what she does in the books. It's a little different on television. But I wanted the character to be approachable. I wanted her to have some flaws, so I created... I'm never real clear about it exactly, but we know she's had a colorful part of her past involving alcohol. So she's a non-drinker, which is not my style at all. And she's had a marriage that crumbled and a difficult period with her daughter. So all of those are traits that I gave to Tempe that are just her own.
Now, you've also said that you always use a core idea from a real case to kind of drive the plot of the current mystery that you are writing. Because I think it's really interesting that this one, Bones Never Lies, picks up on the plot of a mystery that you had written 10 years ago, Monday morning. So it happens to be the only mystery you've written where the killer got away. So when you wrote it way back then, did you ever think it would be a sequel?
I did. In the back of my mind, I had the idea that this villain who gets away, that I would revisit that. I wasn't exactly sure when. As it turned out, Bones Never Lies 10 years later. So that seemed like a good time to do that, to go back exactly one decade later and reintroduce this character that slipped out of both Tempe and Andrew Ryan's hands. And it's always bothered them that that person was never caught.
Now, in the sequel, Brennan has a second chance to stop the psychopath, and he was a serial killer of young girls. And what I particularly enjoy about all your books is that they always have some unique forensic twist in them. And in this one, a body's found in a barrel that's immersed in, of all things, maple syrup. So how did you get that idea?
I got that idea from Alexander the Great. When he died, they had to transport him from, I don't know, from Macedonia to Babylon or the other way around. And, of course, there was no embalming, so they put him in a barrel of honey. I also spent a lot of time in Charleston, South Carolina, and there was someone buried in one of the old cemeteries here who had to be transported back from England by ship, and that was done by placing the body in a barrel of honey. So I thought, well, that's a really interesting idea. I'm sure maple syrup will have the same preservative properties, and since part of the story takes place in Vermont, of course, it should be maple syrup instead of honey. We don't want to give away too many spoilers about the plot turns.
No, absolutely not. And in the search for this really diabolical serial killer, you find a lip print on one of the girls' jackets, and you hope to find, you know, the killer's DNA. Is that something that really they're able to do these days? I mean, find DNA even in lip prints?
Certainly, if there's a little bit of saliva in there. Anything that's organic, that's, you know, part of the bodily fluids of a person, could be preserved in the lip print, in lip balm, for example, which would protect it a bit, but perhaps retain a little bit of saliva, so that's absolutely possible.
Now, not only are you the author of the very successful Bones novels, and you write once a year, but you're also the producer and writer of two episodes of the equally successful Bones TV series, and it's just started its 10th season. So why do you think fans have been so loyal to both the Bones TV show and the Bones novels?
Well, I think the only thread between them is the Temperance Brennan character. She's just a character that has some kind of global appeal, as you mentioned at the outset. She's in 30 different, I think it's actually up to 36 or more different languages. And the TV show is in close to 100 foreign territories all around the world. So what is appealing about this character? Even though she's a little different on TV, I think of her as, she's younger on TV, and I think of the TV show as a prequel, like an earlier point in Temperance Brennan's life. So there has to be something about the character that appeals universally.
It certainly is. And, you know, I read that you have a contract to write Bones novels for only 2 more years. Gee, I would hate to see that happen. So who knows?
Well, I'm well along. I just put down my computer to talk to you. So I'm well along in writing number 18, which will be out next year. After 19, I'm going to have to think about it. I'm going to have to think if we're going to go on with the Temperance Brennan character, perhaps introduce a new series, who knows.
And you have done something that I think is really cool. You've made your writing, in a way, certainly a very good way, a family affair, because you have your son, Brendan, collaborating with you on a set of mysteries, really thrillers for teens called Virals. And I've got to tell you, I talked to you about one of them, that as an adult, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, have you gotten that feedback from other adults?
Yeah, I'm always surprised at how many adults are reading our young adult stories. But they feature Temperance Brennan's 14-year-old great-niece and her friends. But the main characters are younger, but the stories are equally as complex as any Temperance Brennan novel. In fact, I think the Virals novels are actually thicker than the Temperance Brennan novels these days. So, yeah, adults are, you know, really enjoying those plot twists and the use of science on, you know, a simpler level, just as much as they would with the adult books.
And I love the fact that the Viral series really serves as a great vehicle for getting girls interested in science at a younger age, and I think that's so important.
Yeah, and that was part of the impetus for writing them. I noticed that a lot of kids were watching the show, and a lot of kids were reading my adult books. And sometimes a parent would ask me if it was okay for their 8-year-old to read the adult books. And I thought, well, no, it's really not. So maybe kids would like to read about kids using science, you know, kind of at their own middle school, high school level. So, you know, that was the impetus for writing the books. And also, hopefully, Tori Brennan is a good role model, as you say, for young girls, to show them that it is cool to enjoy science and to want to be good at science.
Absolutely. And we can't leave one of your daughters out, Carrie, because she's also part of the family writing team.
Exactly. Carrie and I have co-authored a script for the show, and we will be doing another one this season as well.
So that's pretty good. And
yeah, and then she writes her own novels of her own.
Okay.
She's in a very different genre from me. I keep asking her to just kill somebody in one of her books, and then we could, you know, promote them together, but she's not up
well,
to
you
that.
Never know.
You never know.
And here's a question that you have to, or you would have to really gaze into a crystal ball to answer, but if you could have worked on the most intriguing of all the historical forensic cases, what remains would you have loved to be able to identify?
Oh, gosh, it's hard to pick just one, but I've certainly been intrigued with the recent discovery and analyses of the Richard III remains that have been found in England. The latest report says that, you know, the fracture patterning suggests that he probably had fallen from his horse and might have been a kingdom from my horse. So seeing the identification of the remains and then also the analysis of the fracture patterning was very interesting to me. I'd love to have been part of that team.
Right, and he wasn't murdered or, you know, he died in a different way.
So yeah, it looks like he died in battle, but that he really was down on his feet on the ground, not up on his horse. I don't remember all the details, but it had to do with fracturing in the pelvis, I think.
That's Kathy Reichs in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Bones Never Lie. It's published by Bantam Books. If you'd like more information, go to KathyReichs.com. It's KathyReichs.com. More Carol Marks interviews coming up next. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Michelle Raffin. She's a certified aviculturalist and a regular consultant to zoos and breeders. She's also served as co-chair of a large humane society and on the board of a rescue organization for companion birds. She's going to talk to Carol about her new book, The Birds of Pandemonium, published by Algonquin Books.
And I wanted to start off by asking you, you know, how a chance really encounter with an injured dove in 1997 changed your life, or do you believe things in our life that are meant to be happen because they were meant to happen, because you were at home with your kids, you had had a great career as a Silicon Valley executive, but you put that on hold to care for her sons. And then one morning, what happened when your trainer didn't show up right on time for you?
Well, I at first I was impatient because I was really looking forward to this small period of time that I was doing something for myself, not just for my family. And but my attitude changed when he told me that the reason he was late was that they had seen a hurt bird by the side of the road, and he hadn't known what to do, so he moved her to under a bush. And it just bothered me that the bird would just lie there under a bush with no one helping it any further. So I said to him, you know, do you mind if we go back and take a look? And taking a look ended up with us taking this bird to a vet. And you're right. Sometimes fate just intervenes to change your life.
It sure does. And as Paul Harvey would have said, he was with us and still alive, that the rest of the story that poor little dove did pass on, but you answered an ad for a white dove you saw in a newspaper, and you wound up with quite a few.
Yes. Well, the woman who was advertising, in fact, was starting a business releasing doves at weddings, and that's, you know, fairly common. People think it's a nice thing to do to set a bird free, but she realized, and I now know, that it's really important to not use regular white doves. You need to use homing pigeons because they have a chance of surviving where a normal white dove just doesn't. They don't know how to find food, and like the dove that I found, that sometimes they're picked up by hawks. And so she wanted to get rid of dozens of birds, and I thought I did a good job. I only took six. But it turned out that I had made a mistake because I adopted these birds without really knowing what it took to take care of them. And I now know a lot.
It takes a lot.
Before you get any bird or any animal, you should really figure out whether it fits into your life. I mean, this is a lifelong responsibility. And some of them are like 3-year-old children. I mean, they're smart, and they require a lot of time and energy. And so
here you were. You already had some chickens, and you had to learn, which fortunately you did from a breeder, about, you know, the things that you had to do near your house in order to have birds of different species. So you built what I guess they call these, what do you call them, aviaries?
They're aviaries, yeah. They're big, they're big housing for birds. Some of ours are very tall. They're like 20 feet tall. And we try to give the birds under our care the best possible life that we can. But, of course, it's not like having them in the wild. Because as you know, and as I tell stories in the Birds of Pandemonium, the organization changed. You know, I was a rescue for about 10 years. And then about in 2009, I changed focus. And now, we keep all of the rescued birds that we brought in. They have lifelong homes. But we don't accept any new birds. We now are breeding 6 species of birds from New Guinea because they're very important species, and there are very few institutions in the world taking care of them.
And you had a really, you know, interesting kind of aha moment also about doing that, because you had this endangered exotic bird, which was a green-napped peasant pigeon, and you have such beautiful pictures of it in your book, and his mate died unexpectedly, and he wouldn't stop crying, and you couldn't find a new mate, and so that kind of got you into realizing that these birds needed a mate, and then you got into the whole process of getting the bird to nest and having an egg and incubating it and, you know, successfully hatching it. Isn't that a very long and difficult process?
Oh, it certainly is. And there were 14 failures before we had our first green-eyed pheasant pigeon baby hatch. And, you know, because we're a conservation organization, Pandemonium is dedicated to keeping the birds, letting the birds do most of the work. We don't incubate unless we absolutely have to. And we kept finding, we had 14 failures where the baby would, you could hear it vocalizing in the shell, but it couldn't break out. And I discussed with zoos and other breeders, and nobody really had success breeding this species. And it finally dawned on me that maybe humidity was the issue. And sure enough, that works. We now have live birds.
And you've done amazingly well, because a couple of the first birds that were born, you hand-raised them, and then the others were raised by their parents. And isn't that something that's quite unusual to be able to do in our world, in our civilized world?
Yes, and I think it's important. And in the stories that I've included, because the Birds of Pandemonium really is about the birds, and it's mainly about their stories. And what I have discovered through living with so many different species is they have their own cultures. And we, unfortunately, when we breed them, we often make them into little humans. We're at Pandemonium, we try to let them stay birds. And part of it is having the parenting done by the parents. But it's not always possible. Sometimes parents abandon, you know, babies, or they abandon eggs, at which point we do incubate.
Now, not only are you a role model for saving some of the world's endangered bird species, but you're a role model because you're 63 years young. And,
and you
my
have
goodness.
To say that.
Yeah, and you know what? You're working so hard and you're so active, so I think it's wonderful.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I think that at any age, it's much more important to live life fully than it is to sit home and worry about how old you are, because there's nothing you can do about that, but there's certainly something you can do about the quality of your life.
And how are you able to manage these 14-hour days, and do volunteers really help you with your work, and what do they do?
We are almost totally volunteer-run. We have one paid staff person, but everybody else is a volunteer. And they volunteers do all kinds of things, from accounting to picking up food that gets donated. There's a variety of things that go into running an organization that's dedicated to saving birds. It is very labor-intensive. 7 days a week, you're right, it's 14 hours a day, but it's good work, and it's pleasurable work, and the birds appreciate it. And so I've included as many stories as I could about, you know, their lives.
And you know, how they influence you. And you got this great story in your book about the finch that had wings, but he couldn't fly, and he was not happy because all the other finches of a different species were way up in the rafters. And he told you what to do to get him out of his jam, and I think that's amazing.
I thought it was pretty amazing, too, because I hadn't expected this little, you know, 2-inch bird to be the architect of a ladder, but he certainly was. And I planned to put just one little perch up for a little bamboo stake through the wires, and he immediately jumped up and started eyeing the next place he wanted me to put the next perch. And together, I did what he wanted, and, you know, by the end of the second day, he was able to reach pretty anywhere he wanted in the aviary, and he's quite a happy, you know, his name is Oscar. Very, very happy little guy.
And didn't he literally create his own straw love nest, I think?
He
that's
did.
A lot of
I had not planned to have the birds, the finches reproducing, and I had a decorative gourd that I put up there because I thought it was pretty. And lo and behold, he and he eventually got a mate, Gail, produced a bunch of beautiful babies, all of which could fly. Oscar never was able to fly. He's even when his, you know, birds molt, they lose their feathers, they get brand new, beautiful feathers. Even with new feathers, he wasn't able to fly.
Michelle Raffin, in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled The Birds of Pandemonium. It's published by Algonquin Books. If you'd like more information, go to mraffin.com. That's mraffin.com. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just moments from now will be talking with Dr. Amy Kelly. She's the assistant professor in the Brookdale Department of Geriatrics and Palliative Medicine at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. And she's going to talk to Richard about her new book. It's titled, Meeting the Needs of Older Adults with Serious Illness, Challenges and Opportunities in the Age of Healthcare Reform. It's published by Humana Press. Well, it sounds like it's a no-nonsense subject that you and Dr. Kelly spoke about when you did the interview, and we will unleash it upon an unsuspecting world in approximately 3 or 4 minutes from now. Richard, is it full of information that we need to know?
It certainly is, and there is so much confusion and so much misinformation out there. Sometimes for political reasons, sometimes just because people don't know because things are so complicated. So she does make it a bit more simple and a bit more easy to decode some of the labyrinths we have to go through to figure out our health care.
The health care situation is crazy. I spoke to a friend of mine who was hospitalized in a hospital in the Midwest with pneumonia. He sent me out an email to a few people. It was one of those mass emails of about 10 people saying, I just got out of the hospital. I was two nights in the hospital with pneumonia, no invasive procedures, one CAT scan, one X-ray, a couple of antibiotics, and a stress test. How much do you think it cost?
$20,000 or $30,000?
Well, you're right on the money. It was $33,000 for two nights in a hospital with very simple procedures. Now, I ask you, why? Why?
Well, the reason why, I think, is because it's almost like, you know, you're in a bazaar where somebody sets a really high price.
Mm.
And if you are in the know, you can negotiate that price down. And if you're an insurance company, you can mm-hmm. negotiate that price down.
Mm-hmm.
But they put these high prices up, and with healthcare, how do you say no?
Yeah,
how do you say,
yeah.
no, I don't want that treatment that might save my life. Yeah. I want to save money.
Yeah, well, $33,000 for two nights and several tests, something, and we have a healthcare crisis, and we're trying to figure out the cause of it. Something is radically wrong when we talk about everything but the obvious. And we'll just let it suffice.
You are aware that I paid $6,000 for my dog to be taken care of for two nights. I mean, we're talking about an animal.
To be continued. The conversation with Dr. Amy Kelly is next, and then Richard will rejoin us. A few more thoughts about this, and maybe we'll talk about something a little more positive, like the death of baseball, which has been proclaimed prematurely, perhaps. All coming your way when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great radio station in just a moment.
Did you know an estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it? Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and now, as promised, here's our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation with Dr. Amy Kelly. She's assistant professor in the Brookdale Department of Geriatrics and Palliative Medicine at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. And she's going to talk to Richard about her new book titled Meeting the Needs of Older Adults with Serious Illness, Challenges and Opportunities in the Age of Healthcare Reform, published by Humana Press.
Well, the Affordable Care Act, there's a lot of information out there about it and a lot of deliberate, I think, misinformation out there about it. But how does it affect palliative care? Is it a plus, a minus, a neutral, challenges? Tell us about that.
Well, that's a great question, and I think it's probably important to start first with even just what palliative care is, because it's a term that's really unfamiliar to most folks. So palliative care is a medical specialty, and it's a specialty focused on patients who are trying to cope with a serious illness, and really the goal is to improve the quality of their life and the quality of their care and to support them and their families through these tough times. It's appropriate at any stage of illness and comes in right alongside with usual care. So, you know, right in there with the oncology care or the surgical care or whatever it might be for that particular patient. We focus on symptom management, helping streamline the complexity of care, and really figuring out what's most important to patients and their families so we can provide that extra layer of support.
Well, and it's really, as you say, about quality of life and comfort because, let's face it, in palliative care, you're dealing with people who are not going to get better, right?
Well, that's not always the case. There's certainly no prohibition on palliative care for people who we do expect to get better, often as people having a really serious illness, but it could be someone waiting for a transplant or contemplating a big surgical intervention. And what we find, actually, from research is that patients who receive palliative care right alongside their regular care have better symptom control. They have improvements in their mood, improvements in their quality of life, and we've actually seen for some groups a survival benefit. That people live longer when they're receiving palliative care.
And it is, as you say, multidimensional. It isn't just keeping someone comfortable. There's a lot of other things that are involved in it. So how does that intersect with affordable care at this point now? Does the law have specific items about palliative care?
Well, I think the most important thing that the Affordable Care Act has done is to expand access to health care in general for the full population. There are certainly components of the Palliative Care Act that directly and indirectly also increase access to palliative care services. For example, there are demonstration projects going on with Medicare and Medicaid, figuring out how we can improve care for people who are facing a serious illness, how we can expand access to people who need palliative care services and yet have quite a lot of life left to live, but they need that extra support for them and their families as they're struggling with their illness. So there are elements of the Affordable Care Act that that are working towards improving that access and overall improving the quality and the value of care for those patients.
And how does that affect the Medicare situation with this? Because we're getting all sorts of political ads at this time of year, as you would imagine, and a lot of them are saying that bad for seniors, Medicare cuts are coming because of the Affordable Care Act. How accurate are those assessments?
You know, it's difficult when it's boiled down to one soundbite, but as a geriatrician myself who cares for older adults and those who are healthy older adults as well as those who have serious illnesses, I think the Affordable Care Act is going to be a net benefit for that group and for our population as a whole. There's a lot happening right now trying to figure out how to make Medicare more efficient so that we're actually providing the care that's of the highest quality for older adults and really doing so in a way that helps individuals get the care that is right for them as an individual in the context of their family, in the context of their life. And that's the most fundamental thing about palliative care. It's about supporting a patient and their family so that they get what's right for them.
One of the most controversial elements of all of this is the counseling aspect, because as we near the end, decisions need to be made as to how we want that to happen. Is there counseling in palliative care, and is it advocacy, or explain how that works?
Sure. So one of the really high-level skills, one of the specialties that palliative care providers bring to the healthcare equation is high-quality communication. We really have expert skills in understanding from patients and from their families what's most important, what their values are, what it is they're trying to achieve in their life, working to help them translate that into a medical care plan that helps them achieve those goals and achieve those outcomes, and then advocating for that plan within the healthcare system, which right now can be really fragmented with really poor communication. And I think those encounters where the communication is the priority, whether you call it a counseling session or a medical visit of some other sort, I think those are the integral key towards patients really maximizing their autonomy. That, you know, that's how we help people get the care that's right for them. It's, you know, later in life and in the context of a serious illness, these things are not cookie cutter. You know, we cannot expect one algorithm for one illness to fit every patient. And the communication piece of it is the only way we're going to know what's right for a particular individual so that we can be sure that that's what we're doing for them.
And I think that most people would agree that the decisions really should be in the hands of the people themselves, the patients and their doctors, as opposed to being decided somewhere else, right?
I completely agree. And I think that one of the unfortunate side effects of our current healthcare system is that it prioritizes doing things to people, whether or not they raise the quality of care or whether or not they are consistent with what that person wants.
Can you give us an example of that? Can you give us an example?
Sure. So in the current system, if we have a patient who, you know, really has a goal about spending time outside of the hospital and having their pain well managed, so that they can enjoy the time they have with their family. Our current system doesn't reimburse well. It doesn't offer services and coverage that take care of that person at home and in the community throughout the course of their illness. That our system does pay for that person to come into the emergency room or for that person to come into the hospital or for that person to have surgery. And those things might not actually help that person achieve their goals. They might actually work against those goals. And some of the efforts to refocus our system on talking to patients, on figuring out what's most important to them, on getting them that kind of care where they live, where they need it, is going to help people to again, really maximize their autonomy. And, you know, often a byproduct of that is that it is lower cost care, but that's certainly not the goal.
Well, I can tell you this from personal experience. My mother, who we lost about a year ago, was in a home, and the insurance would cover that, and it turned out to be two or three times more expensive than for her to stay at her home and have a healthcare worker stay with her 24/7. She was much more comfortable at her house, and it was actually less expensive, but it wasn't covered, whereas staying in this other home, this nursing home or a healthcare facility, was actually more expensive and it was covered.
You know, and I'm sorry to hear about the loss of your mother, and that story just rings true with the experiences you know, with so many of my patients and so many families out there, really wanting to honor a person's wishes and give them the best quality care and often in the environment where they're most comfortable, and yet the system is often working against us. Really, there are a lot of financial pressures that just make that kind of care right now really hard for families and patients to make happen.
That's Dr. Amy Kelly in conversation with Richard Neer. Her book is titled Meeting the Needs of Older Adults with Serious Illness, Challenges and Opportunities in the Age of Healthcare Reform. It's published by Humana Press. I'm Michael Harrison. Richard Neer rejoins us in just a moment with some final conversation as we enter the last segment of this two-hour episode of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we are rejoined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just conducted a very informative conversation, as you may have heard before the break, with Dr. Amy Kelly. And we were talking before that about the incredible high cost of health care. And, Richard, you said you spent about $6,000 for a procedure for your dog. I was talking to a friend of mine who's an attorney out in California who they had a dog. Where they have a dog. Dog came down with some type of a rare heart condition. The children love the dog. The attorney friend of mine is a fairly successful music industry lawyer. He's made some money in his life, but he's also a person who's down to earth about costs. And they found out that for the dog to live, this was a fairly young dog, he would have to do experimental surgery that win, lose, or draw would cost approximately $25,000. And he told me how he had to tell the children that and explain to them the situation, talk to his wife, and you know what decision he made? He made the decision to do it. I looked at him, I said, you know, and I know this guy both when we didn't have a you know what to you know what in. And he says, I know it sounds crazy, he said, but they love the dog. The dog is like a part of the family. And what am I going to do? Subject the dog to death? So, as it turned out, fortunately, the dog survived. But, you know, you hear stories like that, and you just have to say, wow. I guess it's as tough to do a surgery on a dog as it is a human. But then again, $25,000.
Well, you and I have talked about this before. It's what you spend your money on, what is important to you, and in the end, you know, your happiness, your children's happiness is foremost, and sometimes you have to make those calls, even though on the face of it, from the outside, it seems silly. But then, you know, you get to people who are of advanced age, and can you keep them going? Can you keep them going with pain and those terrible decisions that we have to make that only we thought that God could make in the past?
Yeah, well, you're on
and
thin ice when
those calls.
You're certainly on thin ice when you compare the decision for a dog with a person, and this, of course, is out there on the public airwaves, so I'm sure people are going, yes, you're right, and other people are going, what kind of a person are you, Richard? And we won't get into all of that. Let's get into something else. Let's get this negativity out of our systems, and we have a couple of seconds left. Let's turn on the sportsman version of Richard Neer. So the World Series came and went this past week. It was 7 games. People in San Francisco were thrilled. People in Kansas City are probably satisfied, at least that their team went right down to the wire. But I've heard it said that the ratings weren't good, and this is indicative of the death of baseball. What's your take on it, O Wise Sports Figure?
Well, you know, when you talk about the death of baseball, baseball has quadrupled its net worth in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. They've gone from a $2 billion industry to a plus $8 billion industry.
Wow.
You know, if you're looking long term, are they freezing out young people by starting the game so late? Are they taking advantage of cable revenue now that games can't be seen in some areas because they don't have the MLB Network or Fox Sports 1 or 2? All of those things might be true, but right now, financially, the game is extremely healthy. Attendance is up, and I think only those people who really don't like baseball to begin with are saying that it's over.
And they look at television ratings as the be-all or end-all of the measuring stick of whether something is real or not, or whether it's healthy or not. And let's face it, that's television. That's not necessarily baseball. You got to look at the big
picture. If your team
is
in it, you're going to watch. If they're not, you may not.
You may not. Richard Neer, thank you so much for joining us. I thank you for your participation in our program. You bring so much to the table. Thanks to Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent, Beverly Santanella, our producer on the front line, and the great Carol Marks, the host and founder of this program. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.